This week on Art of the Air, our entire show features Rick Bellicente, founder and design director of Thirst, a communication design practice providing design and immersive environments for high-profile clients. Our spotlight is on Art C & Company, rebranded and relocated to downtown Valparaiso with owners Bridget Nadolski and Kathy DeLeo.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. They've been with us before, but they're going to talk about their new location and kind of a rebranding, Art C and Company. We have Bridget Nadolski and Kathy DeLeo. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Hi.
Well, we now know that you have made a move to Valparaiso from Chesterton, your location there. Maybe tell a brief history about, you know, your time in Chesterton and starting up. I think it was called Artsy and Antiques or something like that. And then how you've rebranded and your new location. So one of you go ahead and start off.
Well, Artsy, Fine Arts and Antiques started about 3 years ago, I'd say. 3.5 years ago. We actually met as friends and through Kay Shrepko, Kathy and I did. And I happened to wander into Flying Mermaids, which was located in the same building, and one day, and Kay said, "Hey, there's this great spot. You wanna do something with it?" Because she knew I was into art, and I said, "Well, I don't know." Kathy called me a week later. This is the short version. She called me a week later, and the rest was history. I took a chance at going into business with Kathy, and we've had a great time for 3 years, and. Yeah. Currently, we've decided to expand and to try a new location and get more exposure for our artists that we have at Artsy. And so now we are located at 6 Morgan Boulevard in Valparaiso. And we have over 20 different Northwest Indiana artists' work featured there. And we also have small boutiques.
Great. So, are you still able to do classes? And have you picked up new artists since your move?
Yes, we are able to do new classes. We are doing classes in January. The 15th, we are doing a charcuterie board or a breadboard class on the 15th with Carrie Sukowski. And we are doing, and that's with acrylic pour and wood. And then Carrie is also going to be teaching a class on the 29th, which is more like a board and brush class. That'll all be available for prices and dates on our Facebook page.
Do you have a website yet?
We do not.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll be something down in the future. So, yeah. So Kathy, how did you get involved with Bridget? She told us her side of it, but how did you guys, you know, you talked a little bit about meeting, but, you know, how did that come together to become Artsy?
Well, we met at Flying Mermaids, like Bridget said, and she was a customer there, and we got to know each other. She'd come in and visit, and I worked for an estate company in Chicago called Organizing Options of Illinois, which is now Organizing Options of Indiana. So I go in homes and clean out their estates and sell their antiques or their goods. So I have a little boutique here now at Artsy and Company. And so when we decided to do the Artsy and Antiques, we thought that we'd mix art with antiques to try to bring antiques back to life, which, you know, I feel like they're just kind of lost their edge a little bit. But with art and the mid-century modern pieces, those two things kind of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So we just decided to come this way and head towards Valparaiso and bring Flying Mermaids with us and Jazzy Gems. She was also at Flying Mermaids, and we brought Jackie Kalin, who is Jax. So we brought a lot of our artists, Peggy Davis. And then I have a small vintage boutique here in Artsy and Company, where I sell a lot of goods that I've accumulated by cleaning out people's estates. So Bridget and I formed this company together just to give everybody a space to sell their great stuff.
We also have a new artist. They're called 112th Avenue Creations.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
And they do like bath bombs and soaps, and then some mother and her two daughters that work together. And we've enjoyed having them. They've been a big hit too.
And there's like chakras, and they do candles with chakras in them. And it's really nice. Some healing stones. So,
well, it's such Valparaiso is such an art rich community. So I'm sure it's a perfect fit. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what do you have looking forward to in 2022? Now, you've just been there a few weeks at this point in early January. What are you looking forward to doing? And you have a space there. And I saw the parking lot. You might have space for some outdoor things and things like that.
Well, we look forward to pairing up with other businesses in the community is one of the things we're hoping to do. We are also hoping to join in the markets, because we know there's a great market here in Valparaiso. But I think we look forward to just the exposure and getting to know the community better and making connections with the artists that maybe we haven't met yet in Valparaiso and through the university. I think that's where we're going next.
Right. We're going to see if we can work with the university and maybe get some students and get some ideas from them.
So, Kathy, you're still doing the estates?
Yes, I am.
Just got about a minute left, so we want to know about your location and things like that. And also, if artists are interested in pairing with you, how the process they would do that. So give us your Facebook page, location, right, all those types of things, how to contact
the percentage
you
of commission.
Oh, well, as far as new artists coming in, we need to look at their artwork and then agree upon if it's something that fits with our store. And right now it just, you know, the commission kind of is, it goes by how much room they need for their art and how little room they need for their art. Basically, if it's a small amount of room or just a couple pieces, we go on a percentage only. If it's a large amount of room, wall space, or a large area within the gallery, then that, of course, is going to be charged some rent as well as a percentage.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank
That's Artsy and Company, Bridget and Kathy. You can find them on Facebook /ArtzValparaiso Indiana, and they're located at 6 Morgan Boulevard, which is just north of Lincoln Way, right by the Round the Clock. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air. He's had an award-winning design firm called Thirst. It's a slightly political, visually sarcastic, aggressively angry, and sorrowful, lonely. His work repels and attracts, toying with our reactions to body, heart, pinned, still pumping to the virtual sleeve. He's a master of wordplay. The communication is the work, ultimately visual. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Rick Valicenti.
Yo, Larry, did I write that or did you write that? Who wrote that intro?
That was a wonderful intro, but I think this one that's actually in Wikipedia.
Really?
Yes. So,
Master, hello, Master.
I know, it's like, wow, you've arrived when you're on Wikipedia.
Yes, you have.
And you're even more out of it when you don't know that you're on Wikipedia.
Well, I went to your website and couldn't find it very much. And since Esther knows you really well, and I don't, I needed to do some research on my own, which was what we want to do with the whole show today. We want to explore, Rick, all about you, talk about your, you know, origin stories, I like to say, your journey in life. And probably what I always like to say is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
I have to say, when you Google your name, the first thing that comes up is American graphic designer. Like, even without anything else, it's just like, just pops up.
Does it say that I'm going to turn 70 this week?
It did not.
Oh my God. I know. This is like a milestone week for me.
That's
I never thought I'd get this far.
Well, you're looking great for 70. So, not that far behind you. I'm 66. So,
oh, good.
So, what are you expecting? The way you say that, 70 is just a.
I don't. I think I expected the somebody to deliver a walker.
or here's this gold watch.
Oh, the gold watch. I know you've had a lovely sterling career, Rick, and in appreciation, we'd like you to have this gold watch.
Gold watch.
And don't let the door hit you in the butt on the way out. So anyway, yeah. back to your story. Tell us about yourself. Tell us how you got from where you were to where you are.
Okay,
everything.
I'll give you the boring story, but I will say that as a creative person, I was given some subtle but demonstrative encouragement to tap into that by my mother. First of all, my parents were both very supportive, but my mother, when I was young, would pack me up on Saturday mornings, take me from the South Hills of Pittsburgh into the city to the Carnegie Institute, as they called it then, and to take drawing lessons in the basement. Well, others before me had taken drawing lessons in that same room. I believe Warhol, Philip Perlstein, they became great artists. But I got to practice drawing. And then I think when she got tired of schlepping me down there, she decided it would be a good idea to find a private drawing tutor. All this outside of the school system. No one said, oh, your son draws or doodles really well. She just did it. And it stuck with me, of course, until I got into high school and I think substituted guitar, right? Because with our age, 1964 had me as a freshman in high school. And I believe that's the year the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan in that February. Right. And of course, I had to have a guitar. Yeah, long story short, in those 4 years, we went on to win the Battle of the Bands.
Yeah.
Yay. But I don't know that the competition was very stiff. In any case, from there, I went to Bowling Green State University. And now I've completely forgotten that I'm creative at some level, have forgot that I drew, forgot that I played guitar, go to college and learned how to drink as I pledged a fraternity before the first day of class. Like, oh, here I am in the Midwest. And
learning curve.
Yeah, learning curve. I was 17 years old. I hadn't even turned 18 yet. And so I recognized that I had gone out of state, but I'd really just gone from Western Pennsylvania to, where did I go? Ohio, Western Ohio. So that was not really out of state. Per se. So I left Western Pennsylvania, went to Western Ohio as my out-of-state voyage, and was at Bowling Green State University. Was not doing well because I had pledged this fraternity before I turned 18. Thought it was, you know, college was where you drank and had fun. In any case, by the time the third quarter arrived, the guidance counselor said, you have to bring your freshman year average up to a 2.0 in order to come back for your sophomore year. So, oh, I was that bad, huh? And so I took bowling. I took health. I think I took a sociology class. I had to take a Spanish class. And I took art for non-majors.
Wow.
And like, whoa, this is a breeze. And so I got my grade point average up. All of those easy classes, I thought, okay, art. And I went back that summer, told my parents that I was going to major in art. That was the impulsive move. And of course, a first generation Italian father sort of scratched his balding head and just went, what? Really? How are you going to make a living? Right? The normal stuff that you hear.
It's okay. You can do that, but make sure you have a real job.
Yeah. Make sure you really study accounting as your minor. Well, in any case, I did that. I had great fun and success. And then I graduated and took my portfolio now, primarily of life drawings on newsprint with charcoal and Conte crayon, took them down to the business scene in Pittsburgh during what I came to recognize as the first of many recessions. And I go there with this portfolio thinking I'm going to get a job as a, quote, commercial artist, which is what they called graphic design then. And what? I don't know what fantasy world I was living in, but hiring a creative person in a recession in the advertising world who's had no experience, it was not likely to happen. So I spent the next 2 years as a United States steelworker. And I was a card-carrying pickup truck driving, you know, steel-toed shoes, hard-hat donning guy, and I would go there and I made a boatload of money. But in my little tombstone lunchbox, you know, those ones that
look
like tombstone, I would put my 2 1/4 camera and take it into the steel mill until I got busted. And I would take portraits of my coworkers on the lunch break. And it was just like a fabulous series because I had so much money. Again, I bought the pickup truck, but I also bought myself a dark room that I put in my parents' basement. And so I'm enjoying all of this coming back from my 1 or 2 shifts, and I would develop my film, print my prints, and go back to work and do it all over again. But it was the fastest ticket to grad school. So I applied to grad schools. I ended up at the University of Iowa. I think I applied to 7 schools, 4 in painting and 3 in photography. I got accepted to all of them, including Cranbrook for photography. I thought, oh, that would have been a life changer when I look back.
Wow, yes.
The University of Iowa was great. There was a sage guy named John Schultz. He was perhaps my age then, as I am now, but he had a head of snow-white hair. And he treated our classes and our seminar work with so much freedom and guidance and wisdom that I think all of us got transformed in a good way. But I had this photo portfolio now that was the equivalent of my drawing portfolio 6 years earlier. Same subject matter. And now my father has died. My mother has moved my sister and brother to be closer to her sister here in Chicago. Her sister was up in Lake Forest, and now they're practicing interior design, the two women. And I moved back. Not going to Pittsburgh. Nobody's there in Pittsburgh. So moved back to Chicago, and my wife and I get a place in Evanston. She's working at the hospital. Long story short, I'm unemployed again, but there's no steel mill to go to. And I have a graduate degree. So I find myself interviewing for a creative job wearing a navy blue suit, a white shirt, and a red tie. It's like shades of Trump or something. I have no idea. But I remember ending that summer after 50 interviews. And this is a visual for all of your listeners. There were white salt stains under my armpits of this navy blue suit. It's like, Rick, you were really schlepping around Chicago trying to score a gig. And finally, I answered a small little ad in the Chicago Tribune looking for a graphic designer. Or no, I'm sorry, a production artist, because there was then no term really for graphic designer, still commercial artist. It was a graphic designer, ironically, doing employment ads at an ad agency that specialized in employment ads. Now, can you imagine people used to do those ads that were about this big and it would say plant manager and they'd have justified copy and it'd be a logo of the factory in the lower right corner. Someone had to make those for the newspaper. That was me. I lasted 6 months and damn if I'm not unemployed again. You asked Larry for me to tell you how I got here.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what we want to know.
But it jump starts quickly. And now I'm unemployed and I figured, well, I just did 6 months there. That's about a semester, a long semester. Yeah. I need to score another gig that's going to be another semester of real world. And so I answered yet another ad in the Trib. And this one was to replace a woman in Evanston at the insurance company, Washington National Insurance Company. They're no longer there. There's a Whole Foods in its place to replace her while she was on maternity leave. It's like, oh, that's sweet. Another semester.
Right.
I stayed a year and a half, however. And in that year and a half, I ended it. You know, I ended work like, oh, do a 4-color brochure, 4x9 brochure, or do this today's flyer in the cafeteria that tells people when they're getting in line what we're having. Cottage yeah. cheese, fruit cocktail, meatloaf, right? Yeah, a salad. Iceberg lettuce wedge salad.
Iced tea.
That's how I got put on iced tea. So that was the gig back then. And So I asked my art director, or the guy who ran our little studio, if he wouldn't arrange for the insurance company to send me to Northwestern University, where they were having a design congress. It was called the ICAGRADA Congress, and it stood for International Congress of Graphic Design Associations. So in other words, the world's important design associations would send their ambassadors to a different city every couple of years. And in this year, it was in Chicago at Northwestern. Now, I don't know anything about design, really, at this point. But I ask him, and he says, we're not sending you. Like, what are you thinking, kid? I said, well, I'll take the time off. I take the time off, and I go to this Congress at Northwestern. And in the lobby was a display of Cranbrook grad students doing design work. It looked like it had come from outer space. I never saw anything quite like that before. On stage were people like Massimo Vignelli. He had done the Manhattan subway system map, the Bloomingdale's logo. It was Massimo Vignelli. He did all those Heller cups and plates that Crate and Barrel would sell. And Gordon Siegel was the one who got him started as an industrial designer. So that was the sort of scene. It was like, oh, real design. At the breaks, I would hang out at the reception table where there were a couple of women who were late middle ages. And finally, at one break, one woman said to me, you're an awfully nice guy, but why do you spend all this time with us and not the other designers? And I had said, well, you know, I'm not really a designer. I don't know anybody here. And you're awfully nice. They said, well, you're awfully nice. I said, if there's anything I can do for you, you just let me know, is what I said. And one woman said, well, maybe he can help us. We're having a party at various houses tonight, where different, or tomorrow night, where various languages are being spoken. And we'd like some easel cards that show the map of Evanston, where what languages are being spoken at what houses. So I stayed up all night doing the map of Evanston, looking like Massimo Vignelli's subway map, cutting little flags out of colored paper, gluing them on, putting a little easel on the back of these 8x10 photostats mounted to foam core, and brought them in the next morning, put them on her desk. Well, fast forward to the third and final day of the conference. And she says, oh, I'm so grateful. We had such a success. I didn't see you at any of the parties. I said, no, I didn't go to any of the parties. She said, you really would like to meet a designer, wouldn't you? I said, I would. She said, my husband's a designer. And I'm thinking like, oh, look, he's an older guy because she's an older woman. So he's here in Evanston. Why don't you come over and meet him? So I get his phone number and I call the office and I finally get there and she's the receptionist. I said, Margaret, what are you doing here? She said, oh, it's so nice to see you. She said, I have to tell you that Bruce is rather busy right now and his assistant will see you. And if you impress her, then she will go get him. I said, oh my God. So I have those overscaled portfolios that artists used to carry. Right. This one was so big. I would always have to walk with my elbow bent because my arms, well, I was too short for the portfolio. So the woman comes in, she flips through that portfolio faster than someone shuffling cards in Vegas. And she closes it and she goes, thank you very much. I don't think Bruce is going to have any time.
Oof.
I said, let me tell you something. I stayed up all night for Bruce's wife. I put maps on her table the next morning on her request. The least you can do is bring this man in for me to meet him.
Oh, good for you.
She was like, yeah, she was like, whoa, who is this guy? So sure enough, Bruce shows up in the room. And he looks like Yoda. He's a short guy. He's got a big white mustache, right? It's like, wow, Yoda's here. This is pre-Yoda. He thumbs through the portfolio at the same pace that Barbara did. And he goes, well, do you have anything else? I said, well, as a matter of fact, I do have a couple of things. I have some photos that I've been printing. And I have some letterpress work that I did while I was at the writer's workshop at the University of Iowa. I just typeset some title pages for my photo portfolios. He goes, oh, I'm starting a letterpress in my basement. And I love photography. I print photography. I said, oh, really? Well, take a look at mine. He goes, oh, you're a really good printer. I said, yeah, I pride myself in being a pretty great printer, actually. He thinks for a minute and he goes, I'm looking for a darkroom assistant here in the studio.
Woo.
And boom, I started in a week. I was there for 3.5 years. I was his last employee. And when I left, he had placed me as the president of the Society of Typographic Arts. Now, with all due respect, that was a generous thing that he did for me. But it was really a bit of a pimp for the young guy, you know? It was like, there's all these senior designers who've since become incredibly famous on this board. And I'm the president for no other reason other than Rick will do it. Right? He's got a
reputation. Margaret said.
This guy is so reliable. Just put him in the position. He'll do all of your work. You guys just have all the big ideas and he'll implement it. And so that's essentially what happened. And I got to meet the Chicago design community that way. And I got to produce the posters for the events that were happening and the flyers. And I got to show off. And I found myself pissing off the older people because I didn't understand their version of modernism. And I got to a place where I had excited the generation who was younger, like, whoa, what is this guy doing? And I wasn't being silly. I was just trying to figure out how to do it. And it looked like I was doing something on purpose that was a little left of center. You know how somebody will play an out of tune guitar and you'll go, whoa, that's a great original sound. Yeah. The fucking guitar is out of tune. That's it. It's not until you're Joni Mitchell and you can tune it a certain way and it makes even the D chord sound magical.
Right. No,
for me, I was playing the out of tune guitar. I've since looked back on some of that work and it's done well. But I moved through that and I was in that space, Larry, for 39 years.
Wow.
39 years. And then just before COVID, I had been moving on to my 40th year as a practicing designer. I thought, you know what? Is this all there is? And I had nurtured a really first-rate studio. And in that studio were a couple of really great guys who had been with me then, I think, 25 years collectively. And it was their turn, you know, like make way, pass the clients over to them, just have them preserve the archive and the website in perpetuity, and then help them get going. So they're now in their second year. They're just coming up on the end of their second year. They call themselves span.studio.
Okay.
S-P-A-N. I said, just don't use the word thirst. That was my gig. Pick any name you want. And John and Bud are just rocking it. And it's exciting for me to see. It's like,
well, that's one of your superpowers, actually. That is one of your superpowers, is the nurturing and guiding and encouragement of a variety of different talents. I mean, I've seen you in action for many years doing that. You are so, well, one, you just have, like, again, to use the word laser, like a laser vision as to what's going to be cool and relevant. And you see it way ahead and then you nurture that talent. So,
You know, that's, you bring up two things that are interesting. And one is like what it is that I might see. And the other is the reason I might do it. So I'm going to just first touch on the reason I might do it. It was that time I had with Bruce's. I was leaving him at the end and about to start my own studio, knowing that I could always go work for somebody else. I said to Mr. Beck, I said, how can I say thank you? And he said, pass it on. I was like, oh, that's the gig here, right? So if you've got some creative insights or some earned wisdom, and there's some young talent coming up behind you, share it with them. So I found myself going to schools, workshopping, lecturing, even high schools, local high schools. So I enjoy that a lot. So that would be the motivation as to why, and the sort of ability to zero in on what might be new or next or of the moment. I'm of the belief that design is both the leader and the mirror of popular culture. There's lots of things that do mirror and lead pop culture. Music is one, right? Film's another, fashion certainly. But design, and specifically typography, has a way of preserving a moment in time. And then when you go to revisit it, you get lots of sensations just from the contours of a particular letter form or collection of letters or a layout on a page or a specification of color. And you're well aware of what that scene was like at that moment. So that's the mirror portion of design, right? It can be the reflection of pop culture.
Oh, right. And when you see it, you feel it like in every fiber. It's just
every fiber
kind of just radiates.
Yeah. The one I love to use that's pretty familiar to most people, is a piece of type that a New York typographer named Ed Benguad designed, and it was the logo for Superfly. Now, pluck that logo from that movie off of the poster of the guy with the big fedora and the Cadillac and the white bell bottoms. If you pluck that away and you just have the type, you still get that entire vibe.
Yeah.
It's really good. Just like you can see it in the Summer of Love, Haight Ashbury typography.
Right.
Being done. That sees that moment. Now, today we're looking at a whole collection of type specification that feels to me like it was driven and guided by this kind of comment in a board meeting. We really want it to be legible, and we really want it to express a kind of confidence and success.
That navy blue.
Navy blue, certainly, that's right. And sans serif and initial cap. And, you know, we're seeing it in manifestations that look like Meta, the new identity that Mark Zuckerberg put out onto the world.
You know, that's like, what John Habella wanted me to name my gallery all those years ago was Meta, actually.
It's not too late.
It's not too late.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe, Esther, your gallery turns into some Oculus place where people can have immersive experiences.
Well, yes, immersive is the word.
Immersive is the word. That's right. You can put scents in the air and incense. Yeah. That might be pretty cool. And call it the Meta Gallery and see if Facebook doesn't come knocking on your door, or Mark Zuckerberg and lawyers, and say, ma'am, you can't do that.
Yeah. I'll get that. I'm sure I would get that letter.
Well, and also Facebook may be facing some issues because Meta's out there with someone else. And that logo is with some other firm. And so somebody didn't do their due diligence about copyrights. I think one of the jokes, the company that owned a Meta before, he says, I'm just going to call myself Facebook from now on. And he posted something. So, I mean, you know, they didn't really do 100% due diligence. I'm sure they'll pay out something for that. So,
oh, I'm sure. And it'll just be a rounding error. However, it would be really great to call your company Mark. MZ. MZ. In any case.
You're listening to Art on the Air with Rick Valicenti on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
I do look at design, and I think we're in one of those very special moments. We've been in a renaissance of late for the past four decades, I think. You know, we can get to the moon and now we can carry supercomputers in our front pocket. That's all pretty amazing. And we're going to be having this whole revolution and evolution of electric vehicles and flying taxis. And it's just great, right? And before we know it, supercomputers will be subcutaneous and they'll be embedded in us, and we won't even have to do anything except just like, I'll make a layout, make it red, move it over here, do this, do that, and it'll just be happening. So I think we're really part of this fabulous creative renaissance. But what's coming right around the corner is a real call to action for everyone who is in the creative business. We just look. I mean, you've been watching it unfold just like I have. But what I see, besides the inability for those who have big ideas to move beyond their, quote, talking points, quote, which is code for PowerPoint data sheet, right, that they get right in the morning, their talking points, they can't move beyond that to a place where these big ideas are expressed in creative ways. Who's missing from that conversation? The communication designers, the graphic designers. I've heard people say, you know, the Biden administration should actually put out some film work. They should buy some advertising space. It's like, yeah, and they should have their own WPA moment where silkscreeners and graphic designers who got hard hit.
I agree.
Are totally called to action. That last WPA movement, I think that was from the Roosevelt administration.
Right.
Told people that they should brush their teeth and drink milk and, oh, there's this thing called radio and, right? It's like, of course. And that artwork is still today important artwork. Not only did it give those folks a reason for being, it gave them a bit of an income, but it also helped the discourse, and it gave the public a shared set of images that they could latch onto.
It did. It did. WPA, it's very important.
Yeah. And so we don't have that in this large movement today. So I believe there's a whole batch of us creative people. It's not even age related, who have time and have decided that maybe the old way of doing things wasn't so great after all. In fact, that's why we're seeing people just like cash in or out of their jobs. It was failed to be meaningful at right. the level that they wanted it to be meaningful. You don't spend 2 years locked up, afraid to go out of your house in COVID without having thoughts of like, what is the value of my life? Everybody right. had that.
I know. I think everybody reconfigures and has to reshuffle all those priorities and what we can do, what we need, what we don't need, what gives us satisfaction.
That's right. And it all comes down to value. Like, what is of real value? Is it human presence? Well, certainly we're having this two-dimensional experience right now, the three of us. Would this be better if we were all around the table again? But for getting there and getting home, yes, it would be way more fun. We'd be clicking glasses and you know.
Petting the dog.
Cutting the dog. Yeah, all of those things. So it would be much, much more fun and alive. But we've learned to make do with this. But I do believe we are challenging ourselves with the want for something really meaningful. What is it? And we could look and to our leadership and benefit from their guidance. And if there was a call to action that said, you know what, part of our infrastructure program is messaging.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just people who are wearing hard hats and carrying shovels and jackhammers. It's the messaging part, whether it's the audio messaging or the visual messaging or the both. Let's give them some dough because we have some serious space to heal. We have to bring people together in common ground.
Right. And that's an ageless thing, too, because everybody, no matter where they are, whether you're in your 60s and you're reaping the benefits of a lifetime worth of experience or just starting out in your career right now, this is sort of the pandemic has been the reset, the reshuffle, like pinnacle moment. And that is an ageless thing. So
yeah, I know. That's right. And it's, I think what's so powerful about this moment is it's indelible. The effect it has had, aside from the, you know, 750,000 people who have died in this country alone, besides that, it is the families that have been put to stresses they never imagined. It is the display that we wear when we go out in public still with our masks on. It's all of those impressions that are going to be with us for a really long time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The time frames too. I mean, it's just quite astounding that you can be well one moment, ill the next, and within 2 weeks you've perished. You know,
right.
It's just.
I know. And you know, we'll ask you about your COVID experience too, how it's affected you, how it affected this show. Is this used to be alive in a small studio, and then they closed the studio. Uh-huh. And in some ways, and in many ways, I think Lester will agree, it's improved our show because we were able to reformat our show to what we do now, where we have a small spotlight segment where we focus on something happening, then usually either two or, like in this case, a double interview, which we can then pre-record. We can have you where you are at, where we are at, give the illusion to our audience that we're all in the same studio, but by using Zoom, we still get some of that face-to-face action. So,
well, you know, like on Zoom, we are in the same studio.
Yeah, we are. It is. And so we've done that. So it really did that. But how has COVID influenced you? You sort of touched on that, but both positive and negative. You know, we've talked to some of our artist friends and how that actually generated a great creative period in some of them who kind of withdrew. So how did it affect you?
Okay, let's play the familiar. On March 13th of, what was it, 2020?
Yes.
I left my studio that I had paid a year to refresh. This is a brand new studio I'm going to. I'm leaving Thirst. I get a new studio. It's a studio on the second floor at a place called West Supply, which is a bronze and glass foundry in Chicago, run by a woman named Angie West. And it is a place where the sculpture students from the Art Institute come to like make fabulous things. And they continue to do that. So I'm all excited about being there. And I've been joined by my trusted associate. Her name is Anna Mort, M-O-R-T. And we've been working together since 2014. And so we show up there and we're ready to go and work. And we have a couple of opportunities that are smallish in scale. And sure enough, we leave. And that whole month or that whole year of having paid in advance just gone, even though along the way I thought, oh, we're going to be able to come back, right? In like July.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's going to just come and go. No. And so I gave up that studio after the first year. Anna's at home. We were working together on Zoom this morning. And here I am. But I stayed in Beverly Shores. And there in Beverly Shores, I was there with my wife. And she was working on, her name is Diane Elliott. She'd be mortified if I said her name in public. But in any case, she was working on a book project because she had received the Guggenheim that year. And so she's typing away in one room. And I'm in the other room doing whatever I was doing, some design work. And Zooming, and she would get pissed at me because I would talk too loud on my Zoom calls, and she wanted perfect silence. It's like, I get it. So that year goes by fast, and the next year goes by, and now I'm aware that I need to clean my desk. And when I'm cleaning my desk, I find an 8.5 by 11 letter from a guy at Properties. And it says, it's one of those letterheads that shows a passport like photo of the real estate person centered at the top and then their name. And after it says Michael, blah, 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 I forget his last name. It had in parentheses, Mike. it goes on to say, hi, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm a former finance guy from Chicago and my husband and I are living here in Michiana Shores. I didn't read any further. I got out of my chair. I went into the other room and said, Diane, this is exactly what you've been talking about. There's somebody who wrote us here, a gay guy who's talking about real estate. And she always said, it's either going to sell, if we ever put it on the market, to empty nesters or a gay couple. I said, I'm going to call this guy. Now, we have no intention of selling the house. None. It's only the, you know, been there for a year plus a couple of months. And I talked to Mike and he goes, oh, well, I know just where you live. Do you know how many houses are on the market in your price point from Milwaukee all the way over to whatever is north of Union Pier and Lakeside? I said, I have no idea. Why would I have any idea?
Yeah.
he said, zero. He said, these houses don't even stay on the market. They're gone before they're even listed. They're sold. I said, oh, my God. He goes, well, if you ever want to sell your house, you just let me know. And he says, by the way, may I come look at your house? It's like, oh, okay. Well, come on. He comes over the next day. And the next day, he brings his associate, a woman from Michigan City. Rudy is her name.
Yeah.
She's probably around town.
Yeah, Rudy.
What's her last name?
Connor.
Oh, Rudy Connor. Right. Well, they come over, and the next thing I know, they're going to bring some people over to see the house the next day. I'm giving you like a 3-day passage of time. And that person bought the house. And since then, they've torn down the house. So the place where Diane and I stayed in and during COVID was this house that in our mind today saddens us deeply that it was been torn down. But it gives us a little joy that we were the last ones to live in that house, right? That was our thing. It was like Jimi Hendrix's flaming Stratocaster guitar. There's no other song being played on that guitar once that thing's burned.
Right.
Right.
And you know, after you sold it, it's a memory anyway. So,
yeah,
so now it is. Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, I was watching the posts on Instagram. I since have stopped doing that because at first it was like, oh, we didn't cut down one tree. You just cut down 16 trees. Oh, we built the house on the same footprint. Now you're going to change the right. So it was like all that stuff. It's like a different set of intentions,
right,
on how to live. And it's not a critique. It's just they were different. So I thought it's best like not even pay attention. So I don't pay attention anymore. I just like unfollow. And that has led me to, if you ask what else I'm doing, I found myself, Larry, so focused on virtual connection that I'd said yes to everyone who ever posted anything interesting on Instagram. Follow. Right. I think the number of people I followed outdid the number of people who were following me. So now I've found myself on a kick to unfollow 3 people a day. And I'm really good at it. Really good. And I'm finding now that,
is it random?
No, well, I have a couple of things. You know, if I see you posting food, gone, kids gone, dogs gone, cats for sure gone. I don't want to see you in the exercise gym. I don't want to see any snapshots of you on the road. No, but I find myself having a very limited now curated collection of furniture design, because I'm a furniture design fan. And that's the predominant image that I see when I scroll. So it's made it rather difficult now to decide who goes. So I really think I'm like on The Bachelorette.
You're listening to Art on the Air with Rick Valicenti on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
So funny, because you mentioned furniture, and I was going to ask where is Help is on the Way, because that made such an impression on me when I saw that exhibit, the table that you had.
Yes, right.
So I was like, Help is on the Way, and I was thinking, where is it?
Where is the help? Where is it coming? Yep. So, you know, this weekend I just got back last night. I went to Los Angeles, and my son was directing a play in a storefront. There was, like Chicago, like Michigan City, there's so many empty storefronts. And one of his classmates from CalArts, he's been out of school now for, 15 years, well, he's 20, 35. He's been out of school for little over a decade, 12 years, maybe more. And it doesn't matter. So he directs a play that this classmate of his has written, and she's done a great job. He rents a storefront, puts 40 chairs in the room, has it scheduled for 4 nights, buys some 4 beautiful theatrical / cinematic lights that move around on C-stands, and directs this woman for a month and a half or so, and they launched the show. I see the last 2 productions, and it's fantastic. And the last evening, Andy Garcia is sitting right behind me. I had to tell my son, I said, hey, Sonny, you directed a play in Los Angeles in a storefront, and Andy Garcia shows up. This was not a high school play you were directing. This was the real deal. This guy took a couple hours out of his night and paid whatever the ticket price was to come here. So I thought that was great. But here's what I wanted to say. I'm on the flight out. I call my sister, who had been for 30 plus years my business manager. And I say, hey, Barb, I know I've got some miles on one of these airlines somewhere. I want to get a ticket to Los Angeles to see Sonny's play. So she goes, you do have miles with United, but I think you should save those for a trip. I said, Barb, this is the trip. This is what I've been saving them for. So the next thing I know, I'm scheduled for first class. I get in first class. I'm in the first row. I'm in the first row window. And next to me, everybody's wearing their masks. It's very good. Next to me is an old guy. I don't talk to him until we're approaching Los Angeles. I said, oh, do you live here in town? He goes, yeah, I live in Malibu. I said, great. I said, how long were you in Chicago? He said, a day. I said, business trip. He goes, no, I like flying because I do my work when I'm flying. I said, how old are you? He said, 80. Oh, I said, what do you do? He says, I'm a political consultant. I have an endowed chair at Pepperdine University. I don't have to teach. I don't have to do service, but I have to write books and journal entries and strategies for people, blah, blah, blah. I said, oh my God. So you bought a plane ticket so you could work 3.5 hours in one direction and 3.5 hours back. He goes, yeah, I got a lot done. I said, what if you need to do more? Are you stuck if you haven't finished? He goes, no, I anticipate that sometimes. I'll get a flight to New York. That's a 7-hour flight. I said, oh, my God. I said, what do you have to write longer? He goes, well, I keep a cottage in London, outside of London. So that's 13 hours.
Wow.
Wow.
I said, that is a crazy way to work. He said, yeah, it's sort of like a COVID thing, right? I was already in my house and it had its limitations. So as soon as we were able to start flying again, I just used the flight. I love flying. Sure. And he knew the stewardesses. He was in the aisle seat of the first row.
It's so interesting. Everybody's level of distraction and extraneous noise that they can either block or take in. And what is inspiration? I mean,
yeah,
it's so people's inspiration. It's very fascinating.
It really is. And he had obviously found the place where he could get the zone.
Yeah.
Or get in that zone. Everybody will find it differently, right?
You know, it's true.
The shed out back, or someone will have the man cave in the basement, or, you know, there's a professor at Northwestern who, after retirement, still goes to school every day and goes into the basement to like a emeritus office. He's the only emeritus guy who's in that office. Why? Because that's where he goes to write.
Yeah, it's important to him.
It's important. That's right. There was a story about Magritte, the painter. You know, in the morning, he put on his little derby and he'd put on his top coat and he'd walk around the block and he'd go into his painting studio attached to the house.
I know those routines are important.
Yeah.
You have to have your safe studio space where you create someplace that you come in and do your creativity. It's kind of a safe spot. So
it's often sacred. Magic things happen in those spaces. It's all really good.
Do you have a new one?
You know, that's a really good question. I came this close just a couple of months ago to renting a space that was 5 minutes away from where I am here in North Rogers Park. And it was a storefront that was out of business. It was a Caribbean hairstylist who went out of business during COVID, and the landlord was gutting it and cleaning it and exposed a concrete floor that looked beautiful. The lease was in development. It was going to be $800 a month. It was like, well, I can do that for a couple of years. And I was going to do no work there. I was just going to be. And I had contracted with a gold leaf sign guy in town who does the most beautiful gold leaf.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. He does.
Yeah, it was called Heart and Bone, was his company. And he came out, and the sketch I gave him was a word that said sell fish. Right? But it was S-E-L-L. And in the middle was a knot. Like a Boy Scout knot. And I wanted the whole thing gold leaf, full thing. But it came down to the landlord wanting me to take out $1 million liability insurance thing. Got it. I can do that.
Yeah.
But it was for the outside and I had to be responsible for shoveling the snow out front. It's like, I'm sorry. I'm going to be 70 and I'm in your place. You want me having a heart attack on your pavement so that the people live upstairs from the storefront? Don't slip and fall. That's your sidewalk.
Right.
So we couldn't get over that. I just couldn't get over it. He couldn't get over me not doing it. And my mantra was, if it takes too long, it's wrong.
Right.
So it was like, that was wrong. I have lots of mantras. They really guide me. I make these things up and it's like, oh.
That well, works. I love it that you have a Yoda because we have that Yoda joke between us as you always like text very wise words to me.
And I'll sign it Yoda.
Yoda.
Well, yeah. Rick, we only have about a minute left on this great interview.
I know,
it went fast. But to find your work online and find out information about you, how can people find you on your either Instagram, Facebook, or even on the web?
Pretty easy, Larry. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
For all your listeners out there, it is my website is rickvalicenti.com, V-A-L-I-C-E-N-T-I, first name Rick with a K, all one word, all lowercase, though it's not case sensitive.com. And my email is me@rickvalicenti.com. And while I have a little destination on Instagram at Rick Valicenti, some of the posting that I had been doing before my run for the fences was contemporaneous_notes on Instagram. So that would be my thing, contemporaneous_notes. And that's where I can be found. Now, the website, rickvalicenti.com, was, and I'm going to take us full circle here in this minute, Larry, was developed in that time before April Fool's Day. Well, we had left the studio on March 13th. So it was from January to March 13th. And on April Fool's Day, I was going to open a show of new work, which is on that website, in Columbus, Indiana, at my friend's gallery. His name is Jonathan Neshi. And the beauty of that all came crumbling down, okay? But I made a video for myself. Since I didn't get a gold watch when it was all over, I made a video called The Gold Watch. And it's the most cool gold watch ever. It doesn't do anything other than look fabulous. And I did it with some collaborators in Beijing who I'd worked with, and they helped. And the other image or film that I did was I made a film with my old studio, Span, and it was of the Rietveld chair, which was turning 100 this year. But I made that chair actually out of anodized black aluminum with Jonathan Neshi. It is proportion accurate, right down to the millimeter, and it has wheels because I wanted to have the coolest active mobility chair in my assisted living setting.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on Art in the Air, Rick. That's Rick Valicenti. You've heard his story here, everything from his sly political visual sarcasm to everything else he's done. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your story.
You're welcome, Larry and Esther.
My Aloha. Pleasure.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary Levan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. Show